Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Live from the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Five o'clock hours here. It's brought to you by Jackson's Bar and Grill, known for top value steaks in Las Vegas. Great place to hang out. Pre-game, post-game, pre-event, post-event, four events on the Strip. 6020 West Flamingo, Flamingo and Jones. Jackson's one-pound ribeye, just $22. You can get the garlic marinated bistro filet for the same price. You get veggie of the day, and you get your choice of a side. $22, awesome price on the steaks. They're highly rated. People love them. Happy hour going on right now with a $5 happy hour on Modelo and my favorite, the Club Tails. They are my favorite. And right now they've got a summer special on Cazadora shots. Hang out with Chef Lonnie. He's hand-cutting the steaks each morning. Jackson's Bar and Grill, 6020 West Flamingo. Get in there now. It's at Flamingo and Jones. So we're going to get to Miles Simmons here in just a second. But I know you were thinking about being on the opposite side of... Actually, no.
No.
You're on the same side as JBT with the Colts game, right?
That's right. I just knew that that was his team. But kind of the same reasoning that they have just, you know, been upgraded so much. And from a power rating sense, I have throughout the last 2 weeks, but I think it's just gotten a little too far. And now laying that many points on the road, plus the Titans, I mean, they played two playoff teams from last year and some of the better defenses. So I think they can do okay here. Keep it close.
We didn't get to a couple of your college picks. So you're going to fire on the BYU game?
I am. I do like the spot here for East Carolina. I like the quarterback, too, and Caden Hauser. He's played well, completing 72% of his passes, five touchdowns, one INT. Again, a lot about just playing numbers. I liked it better at 7, but I still like it here, getting 6.5 with them at home, BYU having to travel in this game.
Okay, give me a second game.
Second game, I'm pretty high on Memphis, and don't want to take too much away from last week because Troy did lose their quarterback mid-game, but that was a game that people had circled, especially because how Troy played against Clemson, and Memphis just went there and handled their business, and this is a weird sandwich spot for Arkansas, coming off of a big game, a game they could have won against Ole Miss, and now they have Notre Dame up next, so I might come in here taking Memphis not so seriously.
We're going to hit a bunch of Raiders angles with Miles Simmons from Pro Football Talk here in just a couple minutes. The William Hill number on the Raiders win total is now sitting at 7.5. It kind of went all over the place in the preseason. They're 1-1. The under on the 7.5 now has a -145. What do we do with this if you want to play now?
I think it's an overplay. I think that that move has more to do with the teams in their division than it has to do with them. I think that a lot of people thought the Chargers were going to digress a little bit from last year, and we're seeing them just come out on fire. And then I think in people's minds, they're thinking the Chiefs are going to turn it around, right? So with all that being said, and the Broncos, I mean, yes, they lost that second game, but really could have won that, and it was a good game for Bo Nix, where in the first game, he didn't have a good game, but they won because of their defense. So I think it's a lot just because of the division that they're in, which does make sense, but I think the Raiders are going to be competitive in other division games. I think it was just a tough matchup, that first win against the Chargers.
Let's also deal with reality here. How good do we think the Broncos are?
I do still think the Broncos are pretty good.
Why?
I think they're like the Chargers. I think they're well coached on both sides of the ball. I think Bo Nix is good enough to run that offense, and I think we saw it in the last game against the Colts again, even though the first one looked pretty bad. And I think they're a top three defense. I really do.
Miles Simmons is in. Miles, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're good. The Chiefs and the Eagles are both not real pleased right now. If we can we fire Mailata and his comments on WIP, as he was more than annoyed, and I'm thinking he's echoing the voice of his coach here, but Mailata annoyed that all the tush-push stuff has come up and that the pot is being stirred by the Chiefs. Fire this?
What I don't understand is them using it as an excuse to why we won the game.
I think it's incredibly disrespectful to my brothers on defense and special teams who bought out that game, who had our backs when we weren't moving the ball or we weren't doing anything. That pisses me off because we give so much to this game and to kind of base off a short yardage play that is a football play and say that we won the game off that.
Okay, I'm going to make a joke because I like Jordan Mailata. Maybe he should be – his opinion could be discounted because of his background. So I'm sure he's like, rugby? I can't do his accent, his Aussie accent or rugby. New Zealand accent. Okay, give me your reaction to what Mailata said. Disrespectful.
Well, I don't think that Jordan Mailata has a really good argument here if he's going to talk about that. Yeah. So that's about the only accent I can do. I don't really see what he's talking about. I think that a lot of what the discussion has been based off of what Dean Blandino said, not anything that the Chiefs were really saying, which is this play is too hard to officiate. And look, they were getting, as Sean McVay termed it, a quote, rolling start, unquote, on multiple of these tush pushes. They're lined up offside, right? Like Kadarius Toney, when you have these plays. So that's really what it is. And, I think that, and I just saw somebody post this on Twitter earlier today, and I would shout them out if I could remember who it was, but I don't. But the thing to me is the way that Green Bay approached this in the offseason when they, were either told by the NFL or they did it themselves, put the proposal in to ban the tush push. The way that it was proposed was, hey, this play is not safe. But I think, and that if this play had been more, hey, this is too hard to officiate, there are multiple fouls that occur on this play habitually, then that would have been a much better argument for then the NFL to eliminate this. And I think that they would have had the votes if that's the way they went about it. And I think that in this coming year, in the offseason, when I talk to you guys from wherever the league meeting is in the coming offseason, that's what's going to happen. And it's going to be, hey, the argument now is this play has too many fouls that occur habitually, and that's why we're going to eliminate it. And I think that that's a much better argument than it's not safe when there is no evidence that it's not safe, and the argument that it's not aesthetically pleasing, blah, 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 whatever. But if you cannot officiate it properly and there are multiple fouls that occur habitually on this play, then it shouldn't be in the game. Like, that to me is more the problem than, oh, the Eagles can do it and nobody else can do it, and there might be people that get hurt. If it's an illegal play, then you can't do it without doing it illegally, then you shouldn't be doing it at all.
Okay, I'll give you a couple things very quickly and in snarky fashion. If these officials can't officiate it, get rid of all of them. Second, for the rest of the year, officiate it. Throw flags. Correct it. Make an effort. Because if you don't make an effort and there aren't flags on these plays and we see that there should be flags every week, then I'm starting to think this is all a friggin' work and that Roger Goodell put up the officials to whine and piss and moan about it because he didn't get his way, so now he's using officials to state his case. Throw the flag.
Well, throw the flag, but you've got to be able to see it and officiate it. I mean, that was Dean Blandino's point, is that because everything is so compact and you don't have the usual splits, right? The space between the offensive linemen. You don't have folks that are further out in the formation, and it's worse than a wing T or like a victory formation for things like that. That's why it's harder to officiate. And so I don't disagree with anything you're saying, Steve. I think that they should be throwing flags, right? They need to officiate it properly. If they can't, then get it out. Because if there are, and it's not why the Chiefs lost. And I think the Chiefs, most of them would tell you it's not why they lost, right? When you have your former all-pro tight end give the ball away on the goal line, like, that's why you lost the game. It doesn't really have much else to do with the tush push. The reason why we call it the tush push is because it's not a natural football play. That's the other thing that I take issue with Mailata. It's not a natural football play. Like, we've been seeing QB sneaks for all time, but this is not something that is natural to the game. It's an evolution of the game. It's team finding an edge, and I applaud them for that. But again, if you line up offside, if you are false starting, those are the things that make it so that the play should be outlawed, because it's not legal. That's where I agree with the folks who are saying that this week.
I could do this for hours, but I'm not going to bore the audience. We'll hit on it throughout the season. No, I feel really strongly that there's a lot more going on here. There is, I think, a lot more going on with the Chiefs than just losing two tight games. You know, coin flip spots. They had won like 17 of these in a row. Games that were decided by one possession. I didn't like the Rashee Rice T-shirt. I thought that was stupid. I don't know if they're rudderless right now. I don't want to say that about Andy Reid, but I think they have some problems. Are they going to rip? Are they just going to be like, this is the feel good week, the make it all up week? They're going to rip the Giants?
I wouldn't be so sure about that. You know, I mean, I think that their defense has played well for the most part, you know, and part of that is at least last week when we watched them against the Eagles have passing offense issues. They have for like the last year. But when you run the ball so well with a Saquon Barkley, it kind of doesn't matter. So that's one thing. But Russell Wilson, and I know that they're playing the Cowboys, like he played pretty well last week, right? Malik Nabers is a top-tier receiver. So that's something where, look, especially with Fulton, you know, being hurt right now, the Chiefs could have some issues with that at corner. So I'm not necessarily sure that the Chiefs can just go rip the Giants. I wouldn't count on that at all. I think they'll play better. I think they will probably look more focused. One of the things that I've thought about the Chiefs coming into this year is that there's a chance they had a better team, but they had a worse record than they did last year, just given all of the improbable ways that they just seem to keep winning in 2024. So I think that there are a lot of issues. I think Andy Reid needs to be better when it comes to adjusting and innovating for the team. I think that their run game is a real, real issue and that Isaiah Pacheco is not necessarily progressing and taking further steps in his career as you would expect somebody who has as much experience as he does. Kareem Hunt is older as a running back, and he's one of those guys, you know, you need a few yards, great. Beyond that, I don't know that he's got the explosion. So, like, there are a lot of issues. One good thing for them is that Xavier Worthy was back at practice today. And it seems like he is on track to play on Sunday. We'll see if he actually does. But, you know, there are a lot of issues that I do think Andy Reid needs to be better for that team and progressing the offense in such a manner that they look less rudderless, because they have on offense and they've not looked explosive for years now, right? This is not new.
Let's break down one of the Monday Night Football games, the AFC West matchup with the Chargers and the Raiders. 19 play, 11-minute drive for the Raiders to end the third into the fourth quarter. Thoughts on that, starting with the Las Vegas side?
I don't mean to just like dismiss what you're saying, Alex, but it had a lot to do with the way the Chargers were playing defense, right? I mean, Justin Mehner has done, I think, a really good job of making it that if you're going to go down the field on us, we're not really going to give you the explosives. We're going to make you take a long time, have long drives, take up so much clock so that you don't have the luxury of just getting down the field quickly. And there were a couple of times where there were some coverage busts and like the Raiders just could not take advantage of it, not necessarily only on that drive, but throughout the course of that game. So I think that when you have a veteran quarterback like Geno Smith, he was trying to take what the defense was giving him. But at a certain point, like, you got to hit something. And also the issue that I had with that drive was they were down multiple possessions. The Chargers had taken about half, a little over half the third quarter. So we were two possessions in with like 10 minutes left in the fourth. And the Raiders need to be moving with some more urgency, because who knows how many possessions you're going to be able to get. And unless you can go down the field and score a touchdown, then you don't know what's happening here. So that's where my issue with the Raiders was that they weren't being urgent enough in getting to the line, getting a play, trying to make things happen. And, you know, sometimes when you go tempo, that's when you can get those coverage busts. You're kind of forcing them into saying, okay, we got to declare quickly. We have to make sure that everything on defense is right. And sometimes you can goad them into making a mistake. So that's where I have so much respect for what Mehner is doing with the Chargers defense. I think he's doing a really nice job. But from the other perspective of that, if that's going to be the case where they're not going to give you that much, you have to be urgent, right? You have to make sure that you are getting down the field, you're getting to the line of scrimmage, especially when you're down multiple possessions in the second half and you don't know how many you're going to get. That to me is where the Raiders kind of erred.
Miles Simmons on ESPN Las Vegas from Pro Football Talk. And, you know, the worst part for Raiders fans is they had a chance down the stretch because, as you tweeted, are the Chargers charging?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, they tried to, yeah. Right? I mean, going for it, where they went for it, and with the play that they have, which was a jet sweep, like, I don't really understand why you do that when you've got a guy like Najee Harris who, like, is like Kareem Hunt. Like, you need – a yard, like, that's fine for him. Amarin Hampton is another guy that I know, like, I talk to people, you know, from doing what people are really excited about this kid because it looks like he can play. He's got some stuff to him. Like, get those guys going forward. Get your big uglies on the offensive line doing what they're supposed to do and go forward. Right? You don't need to do that jet sweep stuff. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me from at least, especially with Greg Roman as your offensive coordinator. So, the Chargers were trying their damnedest to give that game away, and the Raiders just could not take it because they just really, really struggled to get anything going offensively. And look, I think another thing is when you have a new offensive coordinator, and Chip Kelly has been in the college game for a while, it doesn't mean that he doesn't know pros. He does. He was a head coach for a while. But I think him and Geno have to get a little bit more symbiotic, you know, on the same page. And I think that they will throughout the course of the year. And the Raiders don't necessarily have the best weapons either. And Brock Bowers was hurt. Like, I kept seeing that people were like, how does Brock Bowers only have rah, rah? It's like, dude, like, Brock Bowers barely practiced this week because he's got a hurt knee. So, like, that was another issue. You weren't with your full complement of weapons. All right, so there are a lot of reasons, I think, why the Raiders played the way they did on Monday night, and I expect that they will continue to get better. But look, they're 1-1, so is most of the league.
Sticking with the Chargers defense and the loss with Khalil Mack, but, I mean, they stepped up in that game. Do you think it's going to cost them moving forward?
I think anytime you don't have a guy like a Khalil Mack in there, it makes a significant difference. You know, I mean, he's one of those guys that they just seem, you know, he's a pro's pro. He handles his business. He's still one of those rushers that you're afraid of in a lot of ways because he can still wreck a game. And, you know, I thought that he's played pretty well over the course of these first 2 weeks. And so now without him, you know, teams are going to be able to better game plan to what the Chargers might do without him, since we saw a game basically three quarters without him. And the Raiders aren't necessarily expecting that. Again, when you have a defense that is as stingy as the Chargers, you know, it makes less of a difference in some way because that back end of that defense is so good that they're going to give the front end opportunity. So guys like a Bud Dupree, right? He's going to play a little bit more probably now with Khalil Mack out, a former first-round pick in his own right. I think that the Chargers are going to be able to get by okay. One of the more interesting things, though, now, I mean, they are two games up, basically, in the division, right? I mean, you know, teams are 1-1, yes, between the Broncos and the Raiders. But when you have that tiebreaker, it gives you that edge. And so now they're going to play the Broncos. It's rare kind of to see teams play all three divisional opponents in the first 3 weeks of the season. But if the Chargers go 3-0, I mean, their leg up in the division right now is going to be huge. We're not even out of September. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they end up doing against Denver this week.
Right before you hopped on, I was making the case to Steve that the Broncos were really good, but seems like you don't agree with me at the quarterback position.
I think that I'm a little disappointed in Bo Nix's first 2 weeks because I think he should be taking steps forward, and he has not seemed to do that. There are a few plays against – look, first of all, Denver should be 2-0, all right? Like, the fact that they had a leverage penalty on a 60-yard field goal is one of the more asinine things that I've ever heard of. Why are you doing that? The odds of anybody making a 60-yard field goal, I don't care what we say about K-balls and all that, it's very low. So Sean Payton did something he should not have done in terms of calling that block, and he's admitted that. But, yes, it was the most Browns way for the Broncos to lose that I've ever seen. Anyway, I think that there are good things with Bo Nix, and he's got good weapons, but he's got to start putting it together. This could be a tough matchup for him just based on what we've seen from the Chargers defense over the first couple of weeks versus what we've seen from the Broncos offense over the first couple of weeks. But also, Sean Payton is great at his job. He understands how to utilize different personnel groupings, especially to his advantage on an offense. And I think Bo Nix understands that he also has to step it up a little bit this week. So that's why I say I'm interested to see what happens in this game. I don't think Bo Nix is as shown over the first couple of games. And I expect him to bounce back a little this week, especially because of all of the mistakes that, you know, really piled up on the Broncos late in that game against the Colts.
Miles Simmons with us here on ESPN Las Vegas Pro Football Talk, up with Alex White and Steve Cofield. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit before we get to the injuries with all the quarterbacks. And I wanted to mention Boothgate with Brady. I think someone spoke out of turn. Someone shouldn't have told Pete Schrager at ESPN that Chip Kelly and Brady were meeting often. Carroll kind of reframed it. Like, they're not meeting. They're having discussions. Do you have an issue with this? I assume Florio does, and I'm not getting on Mike Florio. There is an optics issue again because he's in the midst of a 10-year, $37.5 million broadcasting contract.
Well, look, it's a conflict of interest. It just is. And these things don't necessarily matter in 2025 life in the United States of America. They don't. And so, like, it's hard to make the argument that there's this huge conflict of interest, even though we all know it, because does it really matter? Obviously not. But I mean, I thought this since they announced it. You know, Tom Brady wants to be great at everything, and that is something I actually admire and respect. However, if you are being the best broadcaster you can be, you cannot be the best team owner, right? And if you are being the best team owner, you cannot be the best broadcaster. That is in conflict with one another. And so Tom Brady, he has earned the right not to be told no, apparently. And this is where we're at with it. So I think it's a conflict of interest. You know, you could hear folks like Ben Johnson be like, yeah, I'm just in coach speak mode. I don't really see it as that big of a deal. And like, you know, I was talking to my buddy who covers another team, and he was like, you know, if it's me, I'm just going to feed him a bunch of lies, because why not? Like, yeah, I mean, I'd either do that. I go back and forth and being like, yeah, I'd either give him lies or I just wouldn't talk to them. Because why should I talk to you when you're an owner of another team and you were in the coach's booth? So I don't know. It's hard for me to get worked up over it because I don't think anything's going to change. And so at that point, it's like, I don't know. So that's where I just kind of throw my hands up. I'm like, it is what it is, man. I don't know what else to say about it.
Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk, up here on ESPN Las Vegas. All right, the important stuff. I saw your reaction to the Bear not achieving at the Emmys. Why do you hate the Bear? Yes.
Because it got bad, because it's a self-indulgent show, and, you know, they have decided that they don't really care about telling good story. It's just about, you know, oh, look at this visual. Oh, my gosh, you know, look at how we're doing this. Look at the pain inside Jeremy Allen White's eyes. We're not going to craft good story anymore. We're just going to put some scenes together and try and make it so that it's Emmy bait. Well, guess what? Shut out. So make good show again. You know, make a damn good show and we'll all appreciate it again. But this last season of The Bear was bad.
You do understand most of us are idiots who watch. We're not as smart as you. So just the images and the non-storytelling, I'm just titillated because I like it because he's got mental health issues. I can connect with that. He's got family issues. Yeah, I don't need stories.
I can connect with a lot of those things too, but that doesn't mean it.
The Emmys at the top of the heap when you're competing against other great shows. I get it.
I'm just saying that the studio was much better. Hacks, much better, right? The studio obviously still in its first season, but Hacks has basically been on for about the same time as The Bear. And Hacks continues to evolve. They push story forward. And they also have shots that are beautiful. They also have actors that are terrific.
Hollywood.
So
really Hollywood out there.
That's all I'm saying. Hey, live in Los Angeles. No, what do you expect?
I totally appreciate it. Your appreciation for it. Okay, I'm a mouth breather, so I'm going to go real low level here. You are from Ohio. I don't know how big Skyline Cincy Chili is in Cleveland. Maybe it's banned from that area. I know you're a picky eater. I'm going to Ohio. I'm going to Oxford, Ohio, Hamilton, Miami of Ohio for a UNLV game. I'm very stressed out. When can I get my Skyline? I may violate my trust with that company and go to Gold Star. This sounds like something you will not eat. You will not do a five-way spaghetti. You will not do the mini hot dogs piled with a pound of cheese.
It's disgusting. The one time I had Skyline Chili, I was in the Cincinnati press box. Yeah. I'll never forget this. Nick Wagner, who now covers the 49ers for ESPN. At the time, he was covering the Rams, and this is when I was still with the Rams. This was 2015. So they were still in St. Louis. And it was halftime, third quarter, whatever. They put it out, right? And I'm like, I think I'm going to try it. You know, even though I'm from Cleveland, we don't really have that up there. There are a couple skylines, but, like, my mom never brought that into the home for good reason. And so Nick told me, man, you really don't need to eat that. You know you don't need to eat that. Don't eat it. And I said, no, Nick, I need to try it. I got to try everything at least once, right? Usually twice, just to make sure I'm sure. So I had got it, had one bite. Go, ugh. It's like, that is foul. Had the second bite because, again, we got to make sure. It was one of the worst things I've ever tasted in my entire life. I threw it away immediately. Don't eat that. It's trash.
Well, you're not going to stop me. I love it. Yeah, I cannot be stopped.
Wow.
I will not be stopped. I will say that almost everyone in my life, I'm to be judged, everyone in my life hates it. I worked with the sports pig. That was self-dubbed. He was 5'9", 475. And I took him to a Skyline in South Florida, and he was like, this is terrible. It didn't even pass the bar for the sports pig. But I love
it. And that is all you need to know.
I don't care, Miles.
Do you like black licorice, too? Like, what other things that people should not like?
I know. I don't, but my father does. So maybe this is a genetic issue with pops. What's going on with Peacock this week?
We got everything on PFT Live. You can check out the clips on NFL on NBC YouTube page or, of course, on the Peacock app. Streaming whenever you want it.
I'm doing a Southpaw stance. Miles Simmons on Twitter. Ready? Pop, 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 pop. That's you on Twitter now. I like that. I like the jabs. You get the little, like, one-line jabs. There's no, you're not running out of characters. Just quick hits.
You know, that's how I get them. You know, sometimes that's all you need.
Miles A. Simmons up on Twitter. Miles, thank you. Thanks for breaking my heart on Skyline, but you ain't going to stop me. I'll see you, buddy.
That's okay. All right. Take care, guys.
And that's why when Justin Watkins was in last hour and he's like, oh, I love it. Yeah, it's great. Try it. I'm like, I don't know what's going on right now.
Do you think he really knew what type of chili you're talking
about?
I don't.
I tried to explain to him, like, it's not the same kind of chili.
Mr. L.A., Mr. Vegas, Arash Markazi joins Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Yeah, I'm the first one to admit I'm not normal. I know that. We were just having that fast food chili conversation. We go to break, Griffin, and immediately I'm like, hey, Alex, do you want to see some pictures when I went to the place last time? And I do a search. I walk over. I'm like, here's the spaghetti. Here's the hot dog. And she's so nice. She was like, yeah, that looks, I get it on the hot dog. She's probably like, get away from me, weirdo.
Yeah, she's way nicer than me. I would have told you, hey, Steve, not only do I not like these pictures, but I'm going to tell you why I don't like chili and what's wrong with these pictures. So, Alex, good job. Well,
and again, it's not regular chili. It's Cincinnati chili, and I'm going to Ohio. So I understand it's not for everyone, as Miles Simmons is a freaking complete takedown of the place and me. Arash Markazi is with us. Now I'll give you something I'm not in favor of, and that is stadium proposals. Arash, were you witness to a stadium proposal on Monday night?
Yeah, by the way, like a terrible one. I mean, again, I've never talked to a female, and obviously I proposed a couple years ago. I have not yet met a female in person that wanted to be proposed to on the big screen of the game. But beyond that, these were two Raider fans, and the guy proposed to her as the Chargers were in victory formation, killing the clock at the end of a win. You got to do that, like, when the game's, you know, when you get a chance to win, not like when you're about to lose.
So with the Raiders, that's very early in the game. You don't want to risk it.
You got to do that, like, right after kickoff or something.
Man, did you pitch a cot at the stadium? I feel like you were there all weekend.
Well, yeah, big fight Saturday. Relaxed a little bit on Sunday, although there was a playoff game in town. And then, he came back on Monday. But, you know, one of those great weekends, as we talked about before, of where Vegas is the center of the sports world. So it was a lot of fun, great time at the fight, a great time at the game. Now back in Los Angeles.
Arash Markazi sounding disappointed that he's back in L.A. Of course, he has a penthouse suite, a beautiful place in one of the wealthiest parts of Las Vegas, on a rich part of the Strip. I want to get back to the football for a second before the boxing. You sent out a line and you said, I know we're just two games into the season, Chargers are legitimate Super Bowl contenders. Arash, are they?
Yeah, so this is, again, we'll see how good the Chiefs are. I mean, I thought that really said something for them to go to Brazil. I mean, technically a home game for them, but let's be real, it wasn't. To go to Brazil to beat the Chiefs, who have really had their number, that was a big deal. And then to come back where you don't get a home game again, right? You go to Vegas on Monday Night Football, and they really controlled that game. Again, I think the Chiefs are Super Bowl contenders still, despite their 0-2 start. I think Vegas with Pete Carroll will be vastly improved. So, you know, we'll see how big these two games are. But we are really seeing, like, this is Jim Harbaugh's team now. You know, when you look at his track record in terms of going to programs and turning them around, whether you talk about Stanford, whether you talk about San Francisco 49ers, you know, obviously with Michigan winning the championship, like, he finds a way to change the culture and make those teams, again, might not be the prettiest win, but a win's a win is a win. And right now the Chargers are 2-0. And if they can find a way to beat the Broncos this Sunday, they are not only 3-0 to start the season, they're 3-0 in the division.
Let's talk about the other L.A. team, and I was a little late to the party, but now they are 2-0 as well, and I've got them in my top 10. You're thinking they're more as the top 5 team in the league, though.
Yeah, with the Rams, I think a lot of things changed. When we found out that Matthew Stafford was 100% healthy and will not be restricted, we really got to see what this offense looks like, you know, because we really did not get to see it during camp. Certainly not in the preseason, but with Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua, Davante Adams, what that team can be on offense. But then on the defensive side of the ball, just a really young defense a year ago that played beyond a lot of people's expectations. And now this year, I mean, really showcasing what they have. Now, with the Rams, I kind of want to caution folks, and again, that's why this game on Sunday in Philadelphia is so big. I mean, they beat Houston, who I thought would be a good team this year, we'll see. And then going to the Titans, like, again, maybe their opponents were not that great. If they can go into Philadelphia and win that game, that changes the perspective of this team. But I do believe right now, if I looked at the top 5 teams, again, slightly partial maybe, I'm putting the Rams and the Chargers both in my top 5 right now.
Arash is up on Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. He, of course, is the CEO of the Sporting Tribune. You can find him on Twitter at Sporting Trib. I will take you back to the last month or so in Oakland. I went to an Oakland A's game with the SO, my girlfriend. She is a Dodgers fan. We had a fan behind us who I just think came up with a saying and was just kept saying it over and over again. And we're both like, what are you talking about? He kept chanting at Ohtani because the Dodgers were in Oakland. Billion-dollar bust, billion-dollar bust. And she was, like, ready to turn around. I'm like, he's an idiot. Right now he's in the midst of a 50-50 season. This season he's not matching those numbers, but he's pitching. And what he did yesterday, in spite of the loss, is still another incredible achievement, a 50th home run in a game where he threw 5 no-hit innings.
Yeah, I mean, so the difference in this season opposed to last season is that, like, because he wasn't pitching, he was stealing bases at a clip right. We have not seen before, right? And then, so this season, like, obviously he's not going to do that because he wants to pitch. And then having a 50 home run, 50 strikeout season, again, the game he had last night, you know, 5 shutout innings. Like, I think a lot of Dodger fans are obviously upset with Dave Roberts not keeping him in there. But again, the focus of this team is really long. Dave would have kept them in there if this was a month from now in the playoffs. But this is the Ohtani. This season, you know, the fact that he will be a starting pitcher, hopefully if all goes well in the playoffs, you know, the Ohtani that pitches 5 shutout innings and hits the game-winning home run, I mean, that's who a lot of Dodger fans thought that they were going to get. So really, his first 2 seasons with the Dodgers have been historic.
Arash Markazi has his own sub. He's got his own sandwich, and there's a reason. That's why Steve Cofield has no food, named in my honor, because you're smart. You're a good sports guy. Last week, I started busting your chops. I'm like, Deshaun Foster is on the hot seat. He's going to get fired. And you came back, and you're like, if they get destroyed by New Mexico, you didn't even say that. You said if they lose to New Mexico, he's in some trouble. And look what happened. He is gone. Are you bothered by it? And what do you think? Because I saw you tweet this out, that candidates could be John Gruden and Deion Sanders.
No, okay, so I'll start here. You can't have a hypothetic fan base in Los Angeles. I mean, that's why it's such a great sports town. I think every team knows they have to compete. They have to put a winning product on the field. And so with Deshaun Foster, what you had here was there was no pathway to success, and I'm not saying that there is one now, but, like, you can't have less than 30,000 people showing up to home games at the Rose Bowl. Like, that was not a good look. The other thing, like, his treatment of the media was absolutely ridiculous, and I loved Deshaun. He is someone that I've covered since he was in college, and so, you know, to see him, like, shut out the media at practice, not allow them to talk to players, little simple things that I'm like, you know, you're competing for fans in a city that has two of every team. So they got the Rams and the Chargers and the Dodgers and the Angels and the Lakers and Clippers. You go down the list, like, you have to be as media friendly. So that had to be done. Listen, kind of a clickbait story there, but according to, like, the online sports books, who are some of the names that you see, like, you go at, you know, John Gruden, Deion Sanders, like, do I think that they're in the running? No, but there are some names out there. I just don't know, with the support they have from their boosters and the university in this new wild, wild west world of the NIL, I don't see a pathway. I think we are seeing why Chip Kelly resigned in February, right? Like, I mean, he resigned late to become an offensive coordinator in the same conference.
Worked out for him, right? He actually got about the same money in college football, and they got a bump to $6 million here in Vegas. One more thing on the Rose Bowl and it being empty, and there's been complaints for years. Hey, it's too far from campus. The building is too big. And you pointed out, Arash, there's no easy solution. Like, an idea of, like, hey, let's just have them build a smaller on-campus stadium. If you've been to Westwood and on campus, no shot.
It's the dumbest thing, and it happens every year. And sometimes it's smart people tweeting it out. Sometimes it's people who have never been to campus. I mean, the tweet that I, like, quote tweeted, like, their practice facility is shoehorned so tight. Their practice football field, Steve, is 80 yards. That's not 100 yards. Why? Because there's no room for a 100-yard field. Forget about stands. And by the way, UCLA's in the Big Ten now. You cannot have a 20,000 seat. You cannot have a San Diego State type of a stadium. Like, you are UCLA. And, like, yes, right now they're in tough times. But at the end of the day, if they put a half-decent product on the field and they're in the Big Ten, so what does that mean? Like, they're going up against Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State and USC and whatever. Like, they're going to get opposing fans as well. You can't play in a 20,000-seat facility, so you're in the Rose Bowl. Like the solution that makes the most sense potentially is SoFi, but they signed a long-term lease agreement with the Rose Bowl, and they're not breaking that. By the way, that program is bleeding money. They don't have the funds to do anything right now.
Arash, I only have 45 seconds, so we kind of cheated the fight fans talk, but I do have to mention something that was around the fight. I don't know if you saw this, but people weren't aware you can't bring bags into Allegiant Stadium. So a lot of people checked their bags. Women checked their bags. Like, they couldn't get their purses back because the line was like 2-3 hours long after the fight.
You know, so I saw this on my drive home, and I didn't know what was happening, and I wasn't sure, and there was a lot of police out there. So, I mean, that is crazy. They probably, like, these are folks who don't normally go to Allegiant, unfortunately, but that was, that viral video, that was rough to see. So, again, yeah, folks, can't really bring anything these days to games, unfortunately.
No. Arash, you're the man. We ran out of time. I appreciate you coming on with us, so we'll talk to you next week, buddy.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
There he is, Arash Markazi. Oh, man, I have so much more to say on the UCLA thing. We'll get to that in the grab bag.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Well, we just watched the Las Vegas Aces in one of the most incredible runs, I'll say, in sports history. To be a 500 team and then win 17 straight into the playoffs is nuts. You know, some things changed. They actually added, as Willie was telling us yesterday, well, I'll say this part. Nelissa Smith was a steal because they needed that type of player, an inside player. He was pointing out that she came over to the Aces and, like, all the nonsense that was around her, being first she was on the, I almost called him the Pacers, the Fever, and there's a lot going on there with Caitlin Clark. And then I'm not saying it's every case. We don't have a lot of evidence, Alex, of it's probably not good to play on the same team and be in the same organization as your girlfriend. We don't, I don't have a whole lot of, just, right. I'm just saying it, okay? Like, hey, I'll look back at this era with this guy and these two guys. It hasn't happened. But it appears she came over. There's a winning way here. There's kind of a no-nonsense thing with Becky Hammon and then also Asia Wilson. And she's become more focused. And as a result, they went on this win streak. Now they lost last night. So now it's nitty-gritty time. What's going to happen?
It is. I think they're going to win. I mean, if you watched or paid attention to or even checked the scores of the first game, I mean, they really handled business. And then backs against the wall, desperation spot for Seattle, who is a very talented team, found a way to get the win last minute in that one. So I think Aces will be okay. It is incredible. I mean, we were talking about the Aces missing the playoffs, and then they got the 2 seed.
When they were 14-14, if you had a over win total of 29.5 or 30.5, I think it was 29.5, you're like, oh, I got no shot.
Yep.
You did. That's the most ridiculous cash ever.
Yes, it is.
14-14, and you wind up winning 30 games to go to 30-44. It's nuts. Back in the bag.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
I was getting a little convoluted with some of my questions and stupid lead-ins and long stories with Arash. I just want to explain my sarcasm on Ohtani, right? So I'm at an A's game with the Dodgers. There's a fan behind me, an A's fan, who's chanting billion-dollar bust at Ohtani, and we're both like, he's killing it right now. It's August. What are you talking about? But I had slugged this in the rundown. The overpay continues, kind of laughing at it. There were a lot of people, and I'll find you. I know who you are, and I saw it. There were a lot of people, probably more than 50%, who saw the Ohtani deal, the massive deal, and said that's an overpay. And it's not, because he's awesome. We haven't even really seen the deal get a chance to come to fruition. What if he can throw 150 innings next year?
Right.
And be in the lineup every day? What if he is a 175K guy with a 2.5 ERA and 50 home runs again?
I'm glad that you brought this to my attention, because following pitchers very closely this year, I am excited to see another year removed from that surgery, what we get from him next year pitching.
TJ year two.
Yep.
You know, if it doesn't take you down, a lot of guys really start to hit their stride. So I can't wait to see. Well, I'm curious to see what the Dodgers are going to do rest of the season and in the postseason. I mean, health is obviously massive. The bullpen, they've got to find a formula that's going to work. And then everyone's got to hit. And they are starting to hit. Like, Betts is starting to come around. Freeman's had a good year. Hasn't been a power year. I'm not super confident they should be the favorite to win the World Series. And I know at some books they actually just dropped to, like, the second or third choice.
Well, the Phillies have gotten hot at the right time, so It'll be whether they can keep it going or not. They're kind of competing with the Brewers right now to get the 1 seed.
Amazing, isn't it? The Brewers season?
Yeah.
Back in the back.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
Last minute here. Deshaun Foster's out. I think the UCLA job is fine. I don't know what their NIL budget is. I doubt it's, you know, $15 million or even like $8 million like the bottom Big Ten teams have. But if they can have some sort of budget for NIL, it's an attractive job. You're in California. You can recruit Texas and California and Arizona. It's not a terrible job. That said, though, people putting out rumors about Deion Sanders. You do realize Deion signed an extension. Colorado, I think, is going to ruin the day they do this. But he makes $10 to $12 million a year. UCLA is not going to pay their next coach $10 to $12 million, and they're not going to buy out Deion.
No. And how long is that for? It's like
through the 2029 season, so the buyout would be massive. Thanks to Battleborn Injury Lawyers for housing the show. We will see you.